From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Robert Mugabe's 37-year rule of Zimbabwe is most likely at an end after that nation's military began holding him under house arrest a few days ago. Zimbabwe's military leader, General Constantino Chiwenga, is apparently in talks with Mugabe at the president's residence in the capital, Harare. The arrest came just days after Mugabe fired his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who then fled to neighboring South Africa. Mnangagwa, whose nickname is the Crocodile, rivals Mugabe in his authoritarian streak. He has been vying to take over from the president over the nation's first lady, Grace Mugabe, who's also been eyeing the presidency. But Mnangagwa's alliance with the military has now apparently paid off. Mugabe is the only president that many in Zimbabwe know. He took power in 1980, becoming the first and only president of the country formerly known as Rhodesia, and was hailed as one of a number of heroic anti-colonial African leaders, but his subsequent rule has been marked by brutality and anti-democratic authoritarianism. We go now to Zimbabwe to speak with Jenny Williams. She's a leading activist in the human rights group Women of Zimbabwe Arise. She's been a longtime outspoken critic of Mugabe and been arrested and imprisoned a few times. We're so excited to have you on the program, Jenny. It's very, very interesting and time for Zimbabwe right now.
Absolutely, and thank you to all the viewers watching. I hope it'll be worth your time spent.
So Mugabe is 93 years old. He's been in power for 37 years. How do you view what's happening right now? Many are saying this is the end of his leadership. Is it indeed the end?
Well, it seems that it could be that way. I think the talks right now between the general and Mugabe seem to be deadlocked. I think he is brokering a deal, and also maybe he's being a bit stubborn about the methodology under which he is being asked to resign. But I don't think he can come back from this. Age is against him, and I think popular opinion is against him. In the streets of Zimbabwe, it's quite amazing to see how excited people are. This morning, I was myself in Johannesburg, and I checked in at the airport. As I was leaving to go and board my plane, I heard a conversation with a South African and a Zimbabwean. The South African saying, "So what do you think is happening back home?" She said, "I don't know, but I'm getting ready to go back. I'm excited about going home. I have had enough of being in exile here in South Africa." So it's not only in Zimbabwe, it's those people in the diaspora are also wanting to be getting on the next bus and coming home. Let's take it a bit slow. Let's make sure things are really on the up and up. Because my concern as an activist is that we don't want to trade one dictator for another, or we don't want to trade one elite pact for another. And it's looking quite likely that that might be what's occurring.
And we'll definitely get to that. But let's actually give our audience a little bit of a history lesson. I mentioned Mugabe is the only president Zimbabwe has ever known, and initially was hailed as this anti-colonial hero alongside, you know, Mandela and others. And then, of course, it became very clear what kind of leader he was. And it was in 2008 that he finally sort of faced enough backlash and electorally was beaten by Morgan Tsvangirai. This was a tough moment for him, but the military stepped in and essentially kept him in power. Can you explain what happened in 2008 and if it has relevance today?
Well, I think we have to go back a little bit more than 2008. Mm-hmm. I come from Matabeleland. You're speaking to me in my home in Bulawayo in Matabeleland. And the people of this region are long-term supporters of opposition. And just 2 years into independence, the opposition leader, Joshua Nkomo, was starting to be attacked by Robert Mugabe. And eventually, some form of genocide occurred. Over 20,000 people are said to have been killed. Some of those bodies are still being looked for today and have never been found. Some children still do not have right to access their death certificates or birth certificates because of that genocide. And so that is number one bad mark against Mugabe and against Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was the key person in charge of the unit that deployed, the North Korean unit that deployed to conduct this genocide in Matabeleland. And those are some of the ghosts that Mugabe will be thinking of today, because he is concerned that he may go to The Hague for the massacres in Matabeleland just 2 years into independence. 2005, very important year too, we found that there was a popular uprising beginning. The army and the police step in to demolish incredible amounts of homes in urban areas. It's called Operation Murambatswina. The army and the police alongside made thousands of people homeless. The UN had to then come in and do a formal investigation as to what the result of that Operation Murambatswina was. 2008, we have the same scenario. The election occurs, seems to be peaceful. When the results are withheld for 37 days, it's 37 days of hell. Violence is perpetrated against any possible people who thought they opposed Robert Mugabe in all forms of all parts of Zimbabwe, mostly in Mashonaland, and quite often perpetrated by the army themselves. At this time, I am actually arrested, denied bail, and I am in Chikurubi prison for 6 weeks, and I'm just hearing from the prison officers and other people, the violence that is being perpetrated outside in Zimbabwe. A runoff eventually occurs and Mugabe is supposedly hailed the winner. But rumor has it, I have no way to verify, that when Mugabe saw the results of the election loss in 2008, he said he did not want to go to a runoff and wanted to step down. And we hear that the same generals who we are seeing conducting this operation that they're operating, that they're doing, put a gun to Mugabe's head and said, "You are not leaving, you will continue." And therefore, we know that Mugabe then received another opportunity. To the 2013 elections, we have the same scenario. It's called into question. It's not quite above board as to how the election is counted, the election results are counted, released, and we still have Mugabe. I only know him. I was 18 at independence. He's the only president I know. And the people who've kept him in power are the same ones today wanting him to step down.
So where does Grace Mugabe figure into all of this? She is the first lady. She is 41 years younger than Robert Mugabe, so age isn't an issue for her. I'm not sure if she's being held alongside her husband, and the military certainly seems to have sided with Mnangagwa over her.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's been an incredible thing to watch her gaining power and the manner in which she presents herself without any dignity. It's quite incredible to see how bad she could possibly end up being if she became a vice president, and how bad she could be if she was actually a president, the president of this country without Mugabe at her side. I think as he has lost ability to control things, so she has taken more and more of the control, which is why we are seeing very, very rookie mistakes made. For example, the firing of Mnangagwa. The Mugabe I know has been very politically savvy. He would not have fired this man. He would have waited to the Congress in December, 3 weeks away, and he would have tried to manipulate a firing that looked like it was other people and not him. However, his wife has absolutely no political savvy, and she is not seeming to able to be a logical thinker. When you look at her, she looks irrational in the extreme. And she is extremely abusive in terms of the way She talks about power and makes threats. And greed is obviously very apparent. So we were very worried that she had now captured the presidency and was about to capture the presidium completely as we headed towards the ZANU PF Congress. So I think the military has done us a favor and pushed Grace out of the picture. I am unsure whether the president himself will step down, but I think perhaps it is too late for him. And I think the message he has been delivered clearly to him that his wife has no say, no sway in Zimbabwe politics. And in fact, if they could get their hands on her, she would probably be arrested and paraded to court, because I don't think her hands have been clean.
Now, Morgan Tsvangirai, who had won the 2008 election, I understand, has returned to Zimbabwe after Mugabe was placed under house arrest. What do you make of him as a leader and his chances of being a leader?
Well, we haven't been seeing very much of Morgan for quite a while. The party themselves have lacked a lot of direction. There have been a lot of factional fights within the opposition themselves, lots of splits and splits within splits. And then Morgan himself has been diagnosed with colon cancer and has spent a lot of the last few months in treatment in South Africa. We have not seen the party then really reforming, muscling, moving, and filling this gap as ZANU-PF begins to disintegrate, as the dictatorship crumbles.
And ZANU-PF is Mugabe's party. Yeah.
Yes, ZANU-PF is Mugabe's party. As the dictatorship of ZANU-PF and Robert Mugabe crumbles, we should see a rising of Morgan and the opposition. But we really have not seen that gap being filled. If he has come back, well and good. I hope he's going to be well enough if he's going to be part of any transition. But I think, you know, there's a very serious problem. There is an incredibly lack of political manifestos, ideology that is different to this liberation war rhetoric that has become very old. And I think all the parties now have this unfortunate political culture of just being in either opposition to Mugabe and offering nothing new. Zimbabweans are dead tired of all this economic chaos. Children are no longer managing to get an education. There's hardly food in the shelves, on the shelves anymore. The costs are so high that it's absolutely unbelievable how expensive things are. Corruption has become absolutely pandemic. Zimbabweans are tired of this, and they're tired with politicians looking at each other and fighting over positions and forgetting that they bear a people's mandate. And so Zimbabweans now need to start to understand how they take their power back and hold these guys accountable. If there is to be a new transition, I hope and pray Zimbabweans understand not to place a lot of trust and hope in these old guard who may deliver nothing new. We want something new.
I'm speaking with Jenny Williams. She's a leading activist in Zimbabwe, and she's joining us from there right now. What about the role of the rest of the African community, the South African development community in particular, the group of Southern African nations and South Africa's Jacob Zuma have been trying to broker some kind of resolution to this conflict? Do they have the best interest of Zimbabweans at heart?
Absolutely not. This is an old gentleman's club, extremely patriarchal. They pat each other on the back. They protect each other. There is absolutely no people in view here. And this has been apparent for a long time. We had Thabo Mbeki coming up to 2008 with his quiet diplomacy, which meant that Zimbabweans should be allowed to suffer, but we should come with a elite pact of politicians. Most of the leaders within SADC are themselves these old guard in liberation war with nothing new to promise. I've come from South Africa today. As I said, it's quite apparent there is economic problems happening. The children are demanding free education. They are not getting any joy. Things are just unbundling. Meanwhile, Jacob Zuma just continues to amass these monies or those monies and gets more and more charges leveled against him. This is the unfortunate thing about the old guard, the SADC governments that we have. Barring one or two, we have Ian Khama, who's already announced he's handing over to his deputy in a few months. So there are one or two shining stars. Other than that, we don't hold out much hope. And I agree with the military when they told the mediation team that we want to solve this ourselves, because they don't have any hope either.
And SADC, by the way, is the South African Development Community for our audience here. I want to bring up the issue of the economy because Zimbabweans, as you mentioned, are struggling immensely. When I was looking up some of the numbers, I couldn't believe it. More than 90% unemployment. And a lot of Zimbabweans have simply left the country because they just cannot survive. Do you put that at the feet of Mugabe? Or is it also a combination of his corruption and looting of the country along with the sort of international neoliberal capitalist policies that many African countries are struggling with?
Well, perhaps we would be coping better with the neoliberalist agenda if we could be actually utilizing the rich natural resources we have. As it is, we have 15 billion that went missing from our diamond fields. Nobody knows where it is. For example, as they raided the Minister of Finance's house today, they found 10 million US dollars in his house. Right now, if I were to go to the bank and try to draw some of my money, I wouldn't be able to draw more than 50 US dollars, and I might get that in what is called a bond coin, which is a copy of a US dollar equivalent, a parallel sort of coin that we have. Now, the costs are so incredible that it's hard to imagine how Zimbabweans are surviving on a daily basis. Recently, I've done a survey of 170 of our members' homes, and household after household, we're talking about severe hunger. Children are waking up in the morning, having slept the night before, hungry. They can't go to school because they're too hungry. The government has just willy-nilly introduced a new curriculum that has extended the school day from 7 to 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. So a child who maybe has gotten used to going to school hungry up to 1 p.m. in the afternoon now is having to stretch that hunger and remain focused and remain in a learning frame of mind up to 4 in the afternoon. They're not able to do that. Children are now opting out of going to school. It's a sad, sad state of affairs we're living in. Yes, we're talking about Mugabe stepping down, but the real crisis is in the economic mismanagement, which is absolutely 100% Robert Mugabe and his cabinet to blame, including General Chiwenga himself, who has watched this happening, unfolding, whose soldiers, who are the ones commanding the roads today, starving themselves and probably unable to afford to educate their children. That's a bottom line in Zimbabwe.
Jenny Williams, what would you, what kind of most hopeful, idealistic scenario would you like to envision for Zimbabwe today? If everything went in the right way, what would it look like? You know, in these sorts of hopeless situations, only those who live the reality know what's best for the country, the people of Zimbabwe, activists like yourself who've been fighting for, you know, true democracy, human rights and freedom and independence for ordinary Zimbabweans. How would you design Zimbabweans' future, just even in theory, if you had a magic wand?
Okay, magic wand in my hand. First thing, I would get a better mediator to come in, find non-political, technical people who could form a national transitional authority. Preferably that they should be Zimbabweans in the diaspora who are willing to come home and take on this job of fixing the Zimbabwean economy on a maybe 1 year or 2 year national transitional authority. As long as they can get a stable economy, remove the politics away from the economy, decide whether we are using the US dollar. If it's US dollar, how are we going to put more cash into the market? If it's the South African rand, how are we going to deal with the challenges associated with costs? And get professional people to come up with ideas. Hold Zimbabweans responsible. Tell them that they have been suffering long and hard, but they're going to have to suffer a little bit more. They're going to have to start to work harder and take responsibility, play their full citizenship role on a day-by-day basis, produce more food, agricultural products at a higher quality level, get all the factories working again, and start to turn around their economy on their own sweat, blood, sweat, and tears it's going to be. Once we get that happening, I would want this government to be honest and faithful to the children of Zimbabwe who have been the innocent victims of all this chaos for the last 15 years. I would want them to resolve and absolve all the bad debts, all the unpaid school fees, and allow a free and fresh start in the school, public school systems, and start to recover the education system. If we can deal with the education system, we can deal with the economy. The hardworking Zimbabweans come home. Let's pull together. Let's get this happening. We won't need Jenny's magic wand. We'll be doing it together.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Jenny, for joining us today. Is there a website or any place where people can find out about your organization, Women of Zimbabwe Arise?
People can feel free to email me at warzazimbabwe@gmail.com, info@warzazimbabwe.org. We have a website, www.warzazimbabwe.org.
And Woza standing for the Women of Zimbabwe Arise. Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and greetings to all the viewers. Please, we need prayers in Zimbabwe at this time.
Jenny Williams is a leading activist with the human rights group Women of Zimbabwe Arise, joining us from her house in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. We've been discussing what seems to be the end of Mugabe's 37-year rule in Zimbabwe. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.